Hello, I'm Oliver Colling, and this is my 70s TV childhood. Hello, and welcome back to my 70s TV childhood. We are a podcast which is about what it was like to grow up as a child in 1970s Britain, and the impact that television had on our and our families' lives back then. It was quite a long time ago now, but for many of us, it represented our childhoods and provides lots of happy memories of growing up. I suppose it doesn't matter when you grow up, but those early years are so formative and influential that many of us look back fondly on them, and the TV shows we enjoyed both on our own or with the wider family formed a part of a much larger common experience, which I don't think we've really had in the UK before or since. As always, many thanks if you've been in touch with us recently. Our recent episode where I remembered what it was like to go from having a black and white television into the wonderful world of the colour TV has provoked many memories. On Facebook, Mary told us that her family got their first colour television through their Uncle Cliff, who had an electronics shop. How exciting must that have been, Mary? I do remember that just down the road from us when I was a child, we had a big electronics shop, who actually had a fleet of vans for their TV repairmen. And they were men mostly. Do you remember that? Televisions were so unreliable that there was a whole profession and industry around being a TV repair person. Not really the same today, where our TVs seem to go on and on and on without needing any attention at all. I also remember on one occasion our TV went on the blink on FA Cup final day, which for a young football-obsessed boy was a disaster. Eventually it came back on and worked perfectly well after my mother had hit it a few times hard on the side. I think that was the 1970s equivalent of just switching it off and switching it back on again. I've also had a lovely email from Sue, who's gradually catching up on our back episodes. Sue enjoys listening to the podcast as it cheers her up. She also very kindly said she thought it should be made available on prescription from the NHS to all people between the ages of 50 and 65. To cheer them up. Thank you, Sue. That's a really lovely thing to say. Remember, if you'd like to share any of your memories of your own 70s TV childhood, or comment on this or any other episode, you can do so by visiting our blog at www.my70stvchildhood.com. You can leave a comment on our Facebook, Twitter/X, YouTube, or LinkedIn social media pages, or by simply emailing oliver@my70stvchildhood.com. At the time of recording this episode, I've been hearing a lot in the media about the build-up to the new Formula One season. Now, I'm going to be a bit controversial here, but modern-day Formula One does nothing for me, I have to say. When I was a child and we had motor racing dominated by the likes of Niki Lauda and James Hunt, it did seem very exciting and, of course, very dangerous. The cars were pretty flimsy, and it did seem that it was genuinely about who the best driver was and their racing skills. Nowadays, it all seems a bit overly technical to me, and whoever has the best car seems to be the most likely winner. I still appreciate that it's dangerous and hard work for the drivers, but it's, well, really boring compared to the days of genuinely competitive racing. Anyway, all of this coverage of motor racing reminded me that it wasn't just James Hunt and Niki Lauda who attracted lots of attention in the motor racing world in the 1970s. There was also another really exciting and unpredictable racing series which proved enduringly popular on our screens.
Now, here they are, the most daredevil group of dandy drivers to ever whirl their wheels in the wacky races, competing for the title of the world's wackiest racer. Cars are approaching the starting line. First is the Turbo Terrific, driven by Peter Perfect. Rufus Roughcut and Sawtooth in the Buzz Wagon. Maneuvering for position is the Army Surplus Special. Right behind is the Ant Hill Mob in their bulletproof bomb. And there's ingenious inventor, Pat Pending, in his converter car. Oh, and here's the lovely Penelope Pitstop, the glamour gal of the gas pedal. Next, we have the Boldermobile with the Swag Brothers, Rock and Gravel. Lurching along is the Creepy Coupe with the Gruesome Twosome. And right on their tail is the Red Mac. And there's the Arkansas Chugabug with Luke and Blubber Bear. Sneaking along last is that mean machine with those double-dealing do-batters, Dick Dastardly and his sidekick, Muttley.
lead, and now they're up to some dirty trick, and they're off to a standing start. And why not? They've been chained to a post by Shifty Dick Dastardly, who shifts into the wrong gear. And away they go on the way out, Wacky Races.
Wacky Races was a cartoon series from the prolific Hanna-Barbera studio, which was made and first broadcast in the US in 1968. It was a staple part of the British children's TV schedule for most of the next decade, so I think it qualifies for inclusion in our memoir. We reflected on the dominance of Hanna-Barbera in our episode from August 2021. Their cartoons were everywhere on British TV in the 1970s. What we didn't realise as children was that they provided a cheap alternative to making homegrown shows, which was very expensive, and that you could show them to your young audience again and again and again, and they wouldn't complain. So our schedules were packed with the likes of Touché Turtle, Lippy the Lion, and the animated version of Laurel and Hardy. Many of these cartoons dated from the early 60s, but were trotted out regularly for years and years. I've mentioned this before, but there was actually one of my friends at primary school who didn't realise that the Laurel and Hardy cartoons were based upon real people, which I always thought was remarkable. But for every Touché Turtle, which I could take or leave to be honest, there was a Scooby-Doo or a Top Cat and, of course, Wacky Races, which proved more popular. So why was that? And why do I still think of Wacky Races so fondly? Well, let's look at the premise, shall we? As so eloquently expressed in the opening sequence we've just heard, the race to become the wackiest racer was over lots of different legs travelling across the US. With hindsight, I imagine that they were trying to produce a cartoon version of those big star-studded 1960s movies like Monte Carlo or Bust, or The Great Race and Those Magnificent Men in Their Flying Machines. In fact, the more I think about it, Dick Dastardly is a bit like Terry Thomas, isn't he? Terry Thomas was always the slimy, villainous cheat in those kinds of films. So I think I can see a link. When I was watching Wacky Races, the thought never crossed my mind, but now, around 50 years later, I think I've finally made the connection. Like the race-based caper movies, the other cars and drivers have their own eccentricities. So why don't we go through the teams and recall their unique qualities? It will be more exciting than listening to the Formula One previews I was talking about earlier, where the so-called experts drone on and on about the different teams, only to arrive at the unanimous view that Max Verstappen and Red Bull will win because they have the best car. Yawn. Okay, well let's see who's on pole for the Wacky Races. And how many of the cars and drivers can you remember? Let's go in numerical order, shall we? I suppose first is number 00, the meme machine driven by Dick Dastardly and his sidekick Muttley, but on second thoughts, let's leave them until last, as they were the undoubted stars of the show. In car number one, the Boldermobile, we have the Slag Brothers, Rock and Gravel. Rock and Gravel were two cavemen, and their car was a big hollowed-out rock, which was somehow powered by them hitting it with their caveman-type clubs. In fact, they were just like the later Captain Caveman, if you remember him. Next up were the Gruesome Twosome in the Creepy Car, which was a sort of Adams Family type house on wheels, and the Gruesome Twosome were sort of Frankenstein's monster and a Dracula-like vampire. Car number three was the Converter Car, driven by Professor Pat Pending. Clever name that, went right over my head as a child. His car had the ability to change into all sorts of different contractions, which was pretty damned impressive, I think. Car number four was the Crimson Hay Baler, driven by the Red Max, who was a Germanic Baron von Richthofen type. And the car was a red biplane, which could fly a bit, but not very far, I seem to remember. Might have been easier to either have a car which drove better, or a proper plane which flew better, but perhaps I'm getting a little bit too technical now. The gorgeous Penelope Pitstop drove car number five, the Compact Pussycat, in a nod towards female representation, although her car had various gadgets built in which applied her makeup as she drove along, so she might not be the best feminist role model. In car number six, the Army Surplus Special, we got Sergeant Blast and Private Meekly. It was basically a battle tank whose speciality was to fire shells, so not too much of a surprise there. The Anthill Mob drove car number seven, the Bulletproof Bomb. and they were quite amusing. Their car was a big 1920s-style sedan car, like in the gangster movies, and they used to speed up by putting their feet through the bottom of the car and running. Now, as I was thinking of the Ant Hill mob, I realised I couldn't remember any of their names, so I did do something I don't normally do and looked them up. And here's another challenge for you. How many of them do you remember? Okay, the leader was Clyde, and the rest of the mob was Ring-a-Ding, Rugbug Benny, Willie, Kirby, Mac, and Danny. They all appeared to be dwarves, and they wore chalk-striped suits with big 1920s hats, and they all had noticeable 5 o'clock shadows. Number 8 on the grid was the Arkansas Chuggabug, piloted by hillbilly Lazy Luke and Blubber Bear, who was, well, a bear. The car was powered by a huge stove, although on adult reflection, it could have just as easily been a moonshine still. Peter Perfect drove car number 9, the Turbo Terrific, and he was a rather vain all-American hero type who drove the only car in the race which actually looked like a racing car. It was mooted that he and Penelope might have been a couple, and he certainly fawned over her, but whether the feeling was reciprocated is unclear. And then in car number 10, we had Rufus Roughcut, a sort of Canadian lumberjack and Sawtooth, his beaver co-driver. Their car, the Buzzwagon, had circular saws as wheels, which proved pretty useful for cutting up anything which got in your way. I suppose that's a new meaning to cutting up other drivers. So that only leaves Dick Dastardly and Muttley. And they were the reason for the show's success, and why I and my school friends made sure we got home in time to watch it. The Meme Machine, their car, was a big rocket-powered car, and in most races, Dick Dastardly would race ahead of the rest of the field to then lay a trap of some kind to put off the rest of the wacky racers. Even as a child, I thought this kind of tactic was rather self-defeating, as surely wouldn't it have been a bit better if he just carried on forging ahead and won the race? Well, I suppose that would have made for a rather dull watch, a bit like the F1 of our times. There was only ever one series of wacky races made in its original run, but that didn't stop Dick Dastardly from trying every conceivable cheat possible, from simple tactics like putting up a detour sign to send the rest of the racers in the wrong direction, to more Wile E. Coyote-style schemes involving giant boulders and elastic bands. Only one thing was certain. His efforts would fail, and he and Muttley would either finish last or not finish at all. And this would always provoke the same response from Dastardly and from Muttley. We all loved Dick Dastardly because he was such a pantomime villain, brilliantly voiced by Paul Winchell, and because he was really very naughty. We also loved Muttley too, who, by the way, for those that don't remember, was a dog. Muttley appealed to my childlike side by his ability to laugh at Dick Dastardly, and the Muttley laugh became a vital part of any 70s child's impressions alongside Frank Spencer, Ooh Betty, and Benny the Bull. Hey, TC, from Top Cat. In spite of the fact that, in effect, the plot was the same every week, it was very popular, and it became a mustn't-miss part of the TV schedules. It was also quite unusual in that it spawned a number of sequels. Penelope Pitstop and the Ant Hill Mob got their own spin-off in The Perils of Penelope's Pitstop, where the heiress Penelope was pursued by her nemesis, the Hooded Claw.
Seven rollicking rescuers, the Anthill Mob, their courageous car, Chugaboom, and that villain of villains, the Hooded Claw.
And Dastardly and Muttley got their own show too.
Chest should be there for bungling it, which you are there. So
I loved Stop the Pigeon. Educational and cultural it wasn't, but funny and entertaining it certainly was. We've talked about the show before, so I won't go on too much, but it was a sort of Magnificent Men in Their Flying Machines for the under-8s, and perfect for being that. Hanna-Barbera certainly knew their audience, and alongside Wacky Races and Stop the Pigeon, there were dozens of other cartoons which became much-loved favourites. We don't get so many packed schedules of cartoons on mainstream TV now, largely due to the fact that they occupy large swathes of the channels on Freeview and Sky. But every now and again, I remember shows like Wacky Races, and I'm immediately back at home sitting in front of the television, having just arrived home from school, and ready for another exciting 20 minutes, watching Dastardly and Muttley fail to win a race. And we always knew, at the end of the programme, we'd get ready for the next exciting instalment.
And they're off again! The Wacky Race goes on and on, each driver determined to win, manoeuvring for position, looking for the opening that will put him in the lead. The Anthill Mob uses getaway power. Red Max and the Crimson Hay Baler makes his move. The Arkansas Chugabug uses jet power. And the Crimpy Coop pours it on with dragon power. Oh, it's going to be a great race, folks. Hey, wait a minute. Stop! This race starts next week.
Next week? That means I'll get a good start on the other. Drat, drat, and double drat.
Am I alone in having such fond memories of Wacky Races, Stop the Pigeon, and some of the other Hanna-Barbera cartoons? Let me know on our blog at www.my70stvchildhood.com. via our numerous social media pages that I mentioned earlier, or by emailing me, oliver@my70stvchildhood.com. So, shall I go and watch the Formula One highlights, or alternatively, should I go and find some wet paint and watch it dry? Okay, before all the irate emails come in from the many F1 fans in our audience, I'm only joking. Times move on, and far better that the science determines car performance and particular safety then we go back to the days where drivers were regularly killed or seriously injured. But that never happened in Wacky Races. That's about all we have time for in this episode, so take care, and if you enjoyed listening, please take a moment to like, rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We will be back next week with the latest edition of our 1970s TV-related quiz, and we'll return in a fortnight with the next episode of the podcast. Until then, thanks for listening, take care, and join us again soon for more from My 70s TV Childhood.